and it's 6 past the hour on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher, kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. Whoever voted in the People's Choice Award, good morning to you, dummies. Unbelievable. I can't believe these things. What, I mean, you know, one or two of them are okay, but then you read down this list and eventually you're like, what are people, stupid? I think they are, aren't they?
Funny male star?
Oh.
Did someone actually vote for a funny male star?
I don't even know what some of these awards are, Mark Riley. How you doing?
I'm doing all right, man.
Man, I was feeling pretty glum until Wayne Gelman came in here and had the nerve to
rag on my new streamlined minimalist haircut.
Riley's got a serious, serious haircut. And it looks good. It's clean. It's real tight to the head.
Yeah.
It's almost just like a little smattering of
hairs.
Yeah. But you do have all your hair.
Yes, I do.
That's the thing.
Unlike some people who came in here and had the nads to criticize me at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, that was rough, man. I mean, he just went right after your hair. He said,
"Yeah, don't ever talk to me about my hair again." Well. Did we talk to you about that?
No.
Must I defend myself Monday morning?
I think you have
to. The minute I come in here, you know, I just made an observation.
Yeah.
For the first time.
What? From the observation deck of what?
Yeah. Mark Maron.
Yes.
You know, it's the first I've actually seen him dressed and his haircut.
Yeah.
But I never saw it this low.
That is
it does look like a Brooklyn Bowl job.
No, it ain't no Brooklyn Bowl job.
Mark
this is from the hair hut
from Brooklyn.
In Englewood, New Jersey.
They put a pot over your head. All right.
That wasn't so many years ago in your case, huh?
At least don't even try that. You know.
In like the late 90s, I think you were still getting your hair done.
You
want
to do an endorsement for Hair Club for me?
Hey, I still got some. I still got mine up
somebody,
here.
Somebody get me a buzz rater. Let's give Riley a fade.
Give me a fade. I'll be in that Walt Clyde Frazier thing for the hair dye.
I'm sure your wife didn't cut you.
No, man. That's because your woman cut yours. Doesn't mean I have my wife cut mine. No.
It's economic.
I have professionals.
Have you paid for that, Riley?
Haven't you ever seen?
I wouldn't be caught walking down Park Avenue looking like that.
Well,
now, wait a minute. You have been caught walking down Park Avenue looking like that.
Don't even try that.
He opened the door.
Look like me.
Wayne opened the economically feasible door, and you didn't go in.
I decided to give him a break. But see, now I don't want to talk about him going in that hair and him with
an
afro pick and drawing out all kinds of hair every time.
Why are we wasting our time not discussing the issue?
Okay,
I don't know. You came in here, didn't you?
I came off.
Come back when you don't have to stay so long.
You do look pretty dressed up.
Have
Thank
a nice
you.
Trip
Thank
right
you,
if you get work, Wayne.
That was good. That was good. It gets me going, man. I thought I was tired when I got in here. When you two started going at it, I got all worked up.
Hey, man, I'm getting the boys from the hair hut over in Englewood asking you guys.
The hair hut. That's
for calling their hair stylings a Brooklyn bowl cut.
You went that? Well, isn't it out front on the sign?
No.
The hair hut?
We cut heads. Yeah.
The hair hut. They don't have to say anything. Enough said. The hair hut.
The hair hut, man.
They just took a buzz razor to you, right?
Is no, they took the regular clippers, automatic clippers.
I've gotten to one of those buzz cut places. What's that place down in Astor Place?
Astor Place Park.
Right. It's like in the basement. There's like 50 guys with buzz razors. And all they do is buzz cuts of one kind or another. It's only a matter of you want a centimeter or half a centimeter.
I just said, you know, the guy said, you want a little off or a lot off. And I just figured, well, since the guy I regularly deal with isn't going to be back here till March, I said, well, take a lot off.
You know, some people can do that. Like, you know, you seem to be like me. Your guy's out of town, but you've grown. You built a reputation with a guy.
Yep. He's a good
loyalty,
friend. Yeah.
He's built a relationship with the barber for years. And, you know, you trust the guy. And for some reason, you end up going to them for like, what? How long have you been going to him?
Who, Nathan? I've known Nathan for almost 30 years.
So he's been cutting your hair for 30 years.
Yep.
So the one time that the guy's out of town, you go and it's a completely different thing. Did you feel, you must have felt weird at first.
Well, it's the first time. One other time he was in Africa. This was like 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
I went to a guy in Harlem,
yeah.
A guy on 7th Avenue and 132nd Street. He passed away.
Yeah.
But he was, you know, barbershops in the black community are a unique thing, okay?
I
They're
know,
not like ordinary...
Keith Robinson's always talking about the barbershop. He's like, I got to grab me a car.
Yeah.
Where are you going to get it? That guy down the barbershop.
Yeah, he's going to get it. The barbershops in black communities were often centers of gossip, culture, and whatever else. You
know? But literally black market of things come through there sometimes.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. If you want this, if you want that, you want...
You got a guy who's going to know a guy who's going to get in by tomorrow.
Need a flat screen TV?
Go to the barbershop. Someone will be able to help.
Yeah, man. I mean, that's kind of the way things go. But, I mean, it was just a different trip. Because this was done in, like, I don't know, 20 minutes or so.
But did you feel weird, though?
I mean, At first, I'm fine with it now.
Because I go to this woman. You know, I've gone to a couple different people. The woman here in New York, you pay a lot of money for a good haircut.
This was cheap, and this is the first time I haven't had to use a comb since I was in military school.
Yeah, some guys like Dan Pashman, son of Louis Linda Pashman, he'll just get a buzz cut. Now, yeah. I've gotten buzz cuts before. I've gotten maybe one or two in my life, and it made me very uncomfortable.
Well, this, you know,
because like I get to this point, like Chris, even you cut your hair short when you cut your hair, but it's not really short, you know.
Yeah.
But when you get a buzz cut, when you get what Riley did right here,
yeah,
I wouldn't know who I was for about 3 or 4 days, maybe even weeks. Like I'd literally look into the mirror and I'd be like, "What did I do? Who am I? I can't go outside. It's weird. I'm going to wear a hat." You know, but no, I'm not saying it looks bad. You know,
I wear a hat anyway.
No, I know you do. Yes, right. You do. But when it gets really short, there's so much of your identity is wrapped up in hair. Am I wrong or am I being
No, it's true. You the look that you have. The first thing I thought of after I had this done, the guy's going to have to change the thing on the website,
because mm-hmm,
I don't have nearly
even
maturity.
Tried to get him to change that thing for months.
That's right.
The day that thing went up, he thought that your cartoon Riley looked fat.
Yeah,
hear about that.
Fat and out of shape. What's his name? Dave Counts, I think is his name.
Nah.
The guy that does. He did a wonderful job. I'm not trying to rag on him, but I'm fat in it.
It's just you're just saying, hey Dave, you know you've got control over this. Why not make Riley a superhero?
Yeah. Why not make me look like a manly man? You know, with six-pack abs.
Did you see the new Dream Diary, though, the Dream Diary cartoon that Dave did?
No. Wait a minute. I did see one of them.
You look like a superhero.
Like a normal guy.
He-Man there. But am I wrong in saying, though, see, this is one of those things where, am I the only guy that you get a lot invested in? Like, my hair is no great thing. But, like, I was out the other night. Came up to me this guy, this kid Modi, who's a comedian.
Uh-huh.
He's kind of like a... neo Borscht Belt loudmouth. No, he's not unfunny, but he,
okay,
you know, but he comes up to me because I had my hair all greased up, you know, with the little point on it,
yeah,
the little faux hawk thing, and he goes, "What's that?
Oh, wow.
What is that?" You know, and this guy, you know, he's gay, and I said, "You're gay. You should know what this is." But I don't know what, you know, what, how come? Yeah, how come, you know, I don't know why I'm so hung up on it. I wish I could just shave it all off and the hell with it.
People invest various amounts of personal angst into their hair.
Yeah.
I don't. I just, you know, when I was a kid, I used to put all kinds of junk in it. I put Vaseline in it because
uh-huh,
we couldn't afford, like, grill cream or any of that. And, you know, you put all of this stuff in to try and make it look a certain way. It never quite looked the way you wanted it to look. So eventually, after I went through the Afro era, I just went through and said, hey, you know, just keep it the way it is and don't put anything in it anymore.
I saw some guy, like I was doing my show the other night. I was at New York Comedy Club, and there was a guy sitting stage right.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy had, like, you know, he had, you know, perfectly, you know, cut sideburns. His hair was a young guy, and his hair was all slicked back. Everyone looked in place. He had the shirt that was just, you know, unbuttoned with the undershirt underneath. Everything seemed pressed. And I just looked at him. I said, wow, a lot of work goes into you being here, doesn't it? And he laughed. But then I think, like, you know, I don't do much work otherwise. But, geez, some people, you know, and this is men. And I guess it's always been like that. But I have these moments where I'm like, when did we all become, you know,
women.
What about you?
Women.
I guess that's the way to say it. But then you look back at history, you know, Butch Wax and all that stuff, you know, Afro Sheen,
yeah,
everything. It's always been the haberdashery. It's always been that way.
Well, men,
for some men,
for a lot of men, but men don't want to admit that they have this, you know, quote, girly man side of them. They think that, you know, looking at themselves in the mirror and all of that makes them feminine in some small way. Not
well,
me though.
Well,
I don't care.
I'm gonna go freshen up. We'll be back. It's 15 past the hour. We'll be back in a minute on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition.
On record, it's out. It's no secret anymore.
Morning Sedition from Air America Radio.
20 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
You're listening to Morning Tradition. Listen to that guitar. I'll tell you, man, with this new toy that my wife gave me, I am a guitar hero in my living room, man.
What kind of toy?
Now, yeah, that's so funny. You know, I can talk about politics all day long on the show. I mentioned this thing that my wife got me that makes my guitar sound cool, and I get emails up in the wazoo like, what's that thing that your wife got you that makes your guitar sound cool?
Is it like software?
It's a Pod 2.0. Oh, you weren't here when I was talking about it,
no!
Huh? Oh, dude, this
really?
Thing is crazy. It's just a thing with a bunch of knobs on it. It's like a magic box, and you plug your guitar into it, and I plug it into my stupid little amp, my little Gorilla amp. That's just, you know, I've given up that dream. You know what I mean? At some point. You know who I was talking to last night, Riley?
Tell me.
I get an email from my first girlfriend. All right?
Really?
From my first girlfriend ever. All right, not like when I was seven, but the one that really mattered, the one that I first yelled at because
was
I was afraid.
Was this the one that you lost your...
No. I lost my virginity to a waitress at a place I worked.
And okay.
It was like the boss thought I needed to, and he, you know, apparently I didn't know this until later.
He set you up with the waitress?
Well, I think he actually had some sort of weird little lottery or something. Like
congratulations, Marion, you were the winner.
Yeah, well, he kind of put it out there with the waitresses, like, you know, who wants to do this to Marin, and they can, you know, I'll give him an extra shift or something. Not that I was unattractive, but what?
Isn't it in your book?
It is in Jerusalem Syndrome. That story about Cheryl, yeah. But I talked to, where am I going with this about?
No, the first girlfriend.
Oh, I was talking to her, Sarah. Yeah, I called her. She's out in San Francisco. We have, you know, I've known her for years, but I don't talk to her that much. And, you know, I really loved her, and we went through a lot of weird stuff together. But it was a long time ago, and it's so weird when you talk to somebody that you've known. I mean, I went out with her 20 years ago already.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? And then you're talking to her, it's like, oh, it's just that girl that I used to go, well, anyways, what I was talking about was that she's been doing a lot of stuff. She does some singing. She does some fashion design. She's, you know, she's also, her job is in the tech industry. And I was talking about how eventually, you know, because she wants to pursue the arts, and you really have to focus on an art. You really have to give it your all, because if you do too many different arts, you're never going to get quite great enough at any one of them to make it happen on some level, unless you can integrate them all.
Or unless you win a People's Choice Award.
Right. Best drama.
She could get one of those.
Drama, motion picture, The Passion of the Christ.
Yeah, right.
Well, at least apparently some people are willing to accept it's a fiction. So the... on that level, because I think he was presenting it as somewhat of a, you know, in support of the reality of that he believes is true. Anyway, so I was telling her, I said, look, it just took me up until a little while ago that, you know, I really realized that I'm not going to be in a band. You know, I'm 41. You know, the time to start the rock band is past me. But it doesn't mean you can't have a great time and, you know, and consider it a hobby. You ever been to a music store on a weekend? Do you ever go to a guitar shop on
a
weekend?
There's one right up the street from me in Teaneck, New Jersey. I go there. I used to go there on Saturdays sometimes because my daughter had her first piano lessons with her. And it's full of a combination
middle-aged men
and young kids behind the counter looking at them saying, what are you doing in here?
There's nothing funny, though, when you're at a guitar shop and there's all these, you know, 45-year-old noodlers who are just there that were in bands when they were 19 or whatever, but they never gave it up. There's this ongoing, you know, sort of weenie fight, you know, in the rehearsal rooms at the guitar place. You're just sitting there playing guitar because you want to feel what that guitar feels like. And it's only a matter of seconds before some 50-year-old comes up and starts, you know, laying out the Dwayne Eddy riffs or some sort of weird surf mojo just to show you up. And then the greatest thing is when the 15-year-old comes in like, and just like blows the place out. And you got a bunch of middle-aged men going, I guess I'm going to put this one up. I'll get another day. And
I'll be back.
Oh, some of these kids are wizards. But the thing... All right, so, okay, that's what I'm saying. I'm not going to be in a band. All right?
I'm
going to have to accept that.
You sure?
She bought me this thing called the Pod 2.0. Uh-huh. And basically what they've done, you'd appreciate this as a music fan. It's weird. I find myself plugging things, and I don't get any pay for it. But this thing is...
I guess your name isn't Armstrong Williams.
We're going to talk about that later. But here's what they did. They took a bunch of sounds that have been classic sounds throughout the history of rock and jazz and blues and R&B, just classic guitar sounds.
Okay.
And they figured out a way to technologically, you know, through digital technology, to reproduce every sound, and they've got all these different sounds, like, you know, Brit blues, R&B, you know, tweed, stack, you know, all these different sounds that have been, you know, considered by guitar players to be the great tones.
Okay.
And you can get any of them.
You know what you need to do next, don't you?
Oh, yeah, I need to get a drummer.
No! Bring it in here. Bring the guitar, bring the 2.0, and let's rock.
Yeah, I mean, that's going
to
happen.
Yeah, man.
Right?
Yeah, come on. You don't have to sing.
You know what I might
Kayla
do?
Kayla will sing.
You know what I might
no,
do?
I'll sing.
What are we going to sing? That's hilarious. Yeah, people are going to be like, we're going to get to the point on this show where people listening are going to be like, what are they doing?
Yeah.
I don't know. They're just hanging out playing guitar. I think that's Kayla singing. What kind of radio show is this? I thought this was the liberal network.
Yeah. I thought they discussed politics. That's what they say they do.
Oh, well, here's some politics. I'm doing a show. I won't bring it in, but I have thought about, you know, maybe creating a couple of the lead-ins or lead-outs, you know. The
bumpers.
The bumpers.
Yeah.
And not tell anybody.
Why not?
Because, you know.
Come on, man. Live a little. Take a risk. I did. Look at my hair.
I know. You could be paying for that risk for about 3 or 4 weeks.
I know.
No, I don't mind taking the risk, but I don't like the grandstand, you know. But I don't know whether that's because I'm actually insecure, because I don't think, you know, it's hard to know why I don't grandstand.
Hey, man, give it a shot. You might like it.
All right, you're right. I'm going to come in, and we're going to spend the first 2 hours tomorrow of me just, you know, playing the licks that I know. The four or five blues riffs that I can really lay out. So I'm on stage at the Improv this week, and I'm performing. There's like 15 kids in the front. And they're all actors. They want to be actors, and they're visiting New York. And about midway through the set, I learn that they are there. They are on a tour from a Baptist school. They are, you know, a Christian group.
Mm.
And of course, you know, I'll tell you something. I, you know, something happened to me. I'm in the middle of it, and I wanted to fight.
He saw red meat, folks.
I wanted to talk about evolution. I wanted to talk about abortion. I wanted to talk about all these wedge issues and just, you know, lay it down, because they were all Bush supporters. They were all, like, you know, under 20, except for the teacher. And I couldn't understand it.
Right.
I couldn't understand how people who are pursuing the arts, who are people who are supposedly, you know, in the world of the open minds and in the world of imagination and invention and vision, would support that president. And then I found out when they were Christian, I asked them if they were Christian right, and they said, we don't know what that is.
Yeah.
Huh. So I'll talk about that in a second, because they tell them not to tell people that they know what it is.
Ray! I was trying to ask him about the Salvador thing.
Why is his hair smoking?
Well, I don't know, man.
Right,
but we'll find out, because we got the Palm Pilot and more for you here on Air America Radio.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley, Mornings Edition on Air America Radio.
Oh, yeah, 34 past the hour. The new streamlined Mark Riley there.
Thank you.
With Mark Maron here on Morning Edition Air America Radio. It looks good, man. It really does look good.
Now, that we should let the audience know, they're talking about a recent haircut that I had.
But you didn't just cut the hair on your head. You cut your little mustache hair, too.
Cut the mustache hairs. But then, you know,
you
I got stopped going over the GW Bridge, so what difference does it make?
See that? See how much younger you look? They just profiled you like you were a young man.
Yeah, exactly. Come over here.
Who's that black punk in that car over there? Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Riley. The haircut fooled us.
Yeah.
All right, here's, I don't know, Ray Ray's hair was a little singed, or I don't know what.
Yeah, I don't know what was up with that.
Well, this is John Negroponte's Palm Pilot. Newsweek is reporting that U.S. is considering a new strategy for Iraq called the Salvador Option. You know, basically death squads. I'm just setting this up here. You know, and, you know, U.S. Ambassador Assassin John Negroponte, if we could call him that, from the neocon death call. Here's it is. 8 a.m., wake up. Unlock metal security roll gates on Breakfast Nook. 9 a.m. Audition applicants for secret assassinations and kidnapping squads. Note, seeking motivated self-starting team players who are willing to kill other teams' players on command. 11 a.m. Make brief appearance at Green Zone Block Party. Wave from inside armored Humvee. 1 p.m. Call Bush. Tell him no news is good news. Note, no news could also mean that we're in communications blackout due to mortar fire. 3 p.m. Prepare for upcoming Iraqi elections. Urge candidates not to go negative. 4 p.m. Meet with Iraqi officials. No, check tote board to see who's still alive. And the survey says 9 p.m. Drift off to sleep, formulating an exit strategy for John Negroponte. That's right. U.S. Ambassador Assassin John Negroponte, the man on the ground
for the neocon death cult, big utopian vision for the Iraqi countryside. Let me finish my story about performing for these Christians.
Yeah, please.
And I'm not going to be condescending. Again, I know there's a place for belief in the world. I know it makes a lot of people happy. I have these arguments. I mean, I talked to John Larson last night about it because he's, you know, out and out, you know, atheist for philosophical and rational reasons, and I understand that. But then I also said that, you know, people believe, even if it doesn't matter how deep the belief is, but some people need to believe in order to relieve themselves from the idea that they can control everything. And that's where John got completely baffled.
Really?
Jonathan Larson just was like, I don't understand not being able to control everything. See, that's where there's a fall off there.
Yeah.
But I, for some reason, they started condescending to me, these kids, because I was, you know, putting them on the spot. And I said, so I just asked them, I said, are you part of the Christian right? And they go, what's that? And I go, how can you not know what the Christian right is? And one woman goes, well, we're not stupid. And I'm like, well, clearly you're uninformed if you don't know what it is. And then I started to think after, in retrospect, is that a label that we use? You mean, do they not? And then I started pushing them on sort of buttons that I learned, you know, here. And I just started, you know, I started saying, did your minister tell you to vote for Bush? And then they there was sort of a slight change in tone. It's sort of like, no, we just knew it was the right thing to do. And the way they said, you know, we're not part of the Christian right, it led me to believe that somebody had said, you know, if you're ever presented with this in public, mm-hmm. if somebody calls you on it, this is the tack to take. Like, they had talking points on how to behave around being accused of something like that.
Well, it sounds like they were almost Stepford. I mean, did more than one of them answer at the same time?
No, I just made them uncomfortable. They weren't Stepford. They were young, you know, and when I look at them, it's like, look at me. When I was 17 years old, all I wanted to do was be Keith Richards. All I wanted to do was, you know, was learn how to have sex properly. All I wanted to do was to, you know, do drugs and play guitar and, you know, be Bukowski. And like, my heroes were, that was where my head was at.
Okay.
So now I'm assuming that I'm looking at these kids and, you know, their ideals are, you know, we're not going to have sex before we get married. You know, we're not going to do drugs because it's not right. We are going to believe in God. You know, I mean, I questioned everything from a very early age because those were my heroes. So I realized that this is an almost uncrossable chasm. And I started to have this feeling about doing stand-up over the weekend. You know, I go out on weekends to do stand-up. Primarily, like, I don't even announce it on the show just to keep my chops up.
Mm-hmm.
So when I go up to Boston, you know, on the weekend of the 21st, up to Jimmy Tingle's Off-Broadway Theater, that, I got my goods, you know, and I'm in a good shape for audiences to put out what I really want to talk about in some ways. But when you do a 20-minute spot in New York for just a general audience who doesn't know who you are, you know, it's very hard, you know, to sell them on things in general, but then all of a sudden to be talking to religious people and trying to get them to question their faith with some humorous, when you're trying to, they don't want to question it on some level.
What were they doing in a comedy club? That's what I'm trying to picture here. I mean, these sound like some pretty focused people in terms of what they believe in, because I'm still trying to figure out how you found all this out about them.
Because it was in the small room at the Improv. It was upstairs.
Okay.
It was a late show. It was like 12:30. There was about 20 people in the room. They have a big room downstairs, and then they have a small room upstairs. And, you know, what the deal was is you do some audience work. You know, I start talking to the audience.
Or you start asking them questions and you know.
Yeah. So, okay. You know, I start to, you know, get into where they're at. And then it turns out that they're from a Baptist school. But they got very condescending right away. And I felt that thing. You know when you just know this is a losing battle, but yeah. I'm going to keep doing it because it's making me feel really uncomfortable and it's making everyone else feel really uncomfortable. And hopefully we'll find some relief. It was sort of a challenge, you know. But I start to realize as time goes on, and as George Lakoff actually told us, is that when you're talking about framing or you're talking about belief systems, is that that's what they are. They are systems of belief that go very deep. And you're not all of a sudden going to make someone go, oh, well, you're right. Let's go have sex. You know, I mean, let's go smoke some pot and worship Satan. It's just not going to happen, you know, unless they have their own meltdown.
I got a question.
Yeah.
Did you get a sense that these are people who came up with these religious beliefs, or are these kids kids who had gone through some trauma and then adopted the religious beliefs?
Okay, first of all, they're from Oklahoma. So, yes,
okay.
They've been through a lot of trauma. Yeah, it's their birthright.
Tornadoes, the whole Wizard of Oz thing. Oh, sorry, that was Kansas.
No, but Oklahoma is a religious state. It's definitely one of those states. You know, one of the guys was an American Indian, which was interesting. But, you know, they go to a religious school. I don't think it was trauma. I think they were brought up with it. They were brought up to believe certain things.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, and it's just amazing to me that even... Yeah, even with you know, how we feel, what our beliefs are, or what our desires are, it's not, it's never as simple as just saying, hey, look, here's some proof that you're wrong, change, because belief is not, doesn't hinge on that. It doesn't hinge on reason. Like I did this bit that I've been working on about, you know, about intelligent design, about how people are literally like the explanation is everything's so complicated. I mean, it had to, you know, it can't just be explained. It had to be created by some sort of God, which is almost like saying, you know, I don't understand it, so it must be magic. But, you know, so I did that joke, and they're just, they, for them to make the jump from, you know, what they believe in, the religious, you know, icons of their choice, to it's really mystical thinking and therefore falls into the same realm as fairy tales and magic, is, they just can't make the leap. They're not going to make the leap. They can't look at it like that.
But see, now, I'm having trouble making the following leap. What are a group of religious Christian school kids doing at the Improv at 12:30 in the morning?
Because comedy has been gutted. I mean, they see comedy on TV. They just think, like, let's go to the comedy club. You know, there's not dozens of guys out there doing what I do.
Okay.
You know what I mean? You know, they just think it's sort of
okay, so somebody told them about the Improv, and they said, oh, man,
the Improv. The Improvs are all over the place. This Improv is sort of a renegade Improv, actually. But the Improvs are a chain.
Yeah.
And they're a chain. You know, these clubs, they go out of their way to book people that people like, that people that toe the party line. I mean, think of a comic that's out there working right now, or a big comic that, you know, outside of maybe, you know, Chris Rock, who is really, you know, tackling any social issues at all in your mind.
You think I only know the black guys?
No, but I'm just saying he's the only guy out there doing
it. I'm only kidding.
With a public profile.
No, you're right. You know, you're right.
It's just sort of an interesting thing. I saw
Dennis Miller on that. He's on some commercial now for some product I can't use because he's on it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I forgot what it was. It's like, you know, get on board, people. It was like maybe for a phone service. I don't know. Somebody bugged me.
ANV on the blog. I just posted, isn't Larson a sad Swedish atheist? Man, if I could just, like, if I could give you a picture of Larson, you know, sitting there in the booth, you know, keeping up with the show and munching on his bag of sad green peppers, you know.
No, they have a big crunch, though. They
I'll tell you one thing. He's getting less and less sad. He's lost, like, 30 pounds. The dude's, like, you know, he's fading away to nothing.
Six-pack abs.
It's very interesting. I don't know about that. I don't know. He's doing the...
Okay, four-pack.
He's one of these guys that's, like, so, like, you know, not prone to exercise. You're like, are you working out as well? He's like, I walk in
from the car into the building.
Exactly. Sometimes I'll give myself, he plays tennis. He plays a little tennis once a week. But I'm like, you know, I don't, you know, I swear to God, Larson, Clutch Larson in the booth, if you exercised, I mean, if you actually ran 3 days a week, you'd fade away to nothing. It's going to be interesting to see how your skin hangs on that frame.
He'd be able to bend steel in his bare hands if he started exercising.
Yeah. I figured I'd start exercising once I wasn't carrying so much around to do it.
Yeah, but then you get a real sweat up, you know, when you're carrying that weight. But, you know,
who wants to?
It's gonna be interesting. It's gonna be interesting to see you.
What happens with all the flab bag hanging off me?
So just sort of like you're gonna make this transition from like this, you know, Swedish blob into a great Swedish god figure. You're going to be like, isn't Thor one of them?
See, in my head, I'm already there.
Yeah.
So it's just like maybe the rest of the world will see it that way.
Are you really already?
In my head, sadly enough, yeah. That's what I'm saying.
That's right.
You do read too many comic books. Too many comic books. Now I am ready to wear the hat.
Yes.
Now bring me my hammer.
Strong like bull.
Well, I guess we got to do some news.
Yeah, why not?
All right, so when we come back, we'll talk about Iraq, John Necroponte, the U.S. assassin ambassador to the region, ex-overseer of the Honduran death squads, now has some big ideas for a franchise. It's 45 past the hour, Air America Radio.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com. Courtesy of Air America Radio.
Past the hour. Good morning. It's Morning's Edition. I'm Mark Maron. It's the new trimmed down Mark Riley, trimmed on the head.
Good morning.
Yeah. And you're dressed up, too. You got something going on today? What's going on? Yeah, I think it looks like you're a little dressed up, bro.
I'm attending a circumcision later.
What is that? Hold on a second, because I think I just missed my opportunity to get on board. Yeah, out of all the things to use for a lie.
You mean it wouldn't work with my wife?
No, I guess we're not going to get into wherever you're going, Mr. Snazzy.
I just decided I was an usher at church yesterday. So you decided to continue the fantasy. No, only kidding.
Did your wife put you out?
I ironed a couple of shirts, so I figured, what the hell? I'll just wear one of them.
Well, you look nice.
Thank you very much.
So if you want to blog, morningsedition.com. If you want to email, sedition@airamericaradio.com. Hey, Charlotte, happy birthday, Charlotte. Say happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Charlotte.
One of our bloggers, Mara, is, her daughter, it's her birthday, and I believe it's 13, if I'm not mistaken. So
lucky 13.
Happy birthday to you, Charlotte, and thanks for listening. Isn't that nice?
Yeah.
You know, some radio stations, you know, they reach out to prisoners in jails who are listening and take phone calls from them and song requests. Not here. 13-year-old gals who are having their birthday. Good morning. Look, let's do this. You know, Powell is saying that Iraq, what is it that he's basically trying to say?
He's admitting that it's a quagmire. He's admitting it's a mess. He's admitting that it's going to take a lot longer than most people have been led to believe before this whole thing is under control. But he wants to have the elections. And this is in the wake, by the way, of the Association of Muslim Scholars, the Sunni group that had called for a boycott. They said they'd call off the boycott if the United States produced a timetable for withdrawing troops, something America's not going
to
do, by the way.
Yeah, give us something to look forward to, and maybe we'll play along.
Give me something we can feel here.
Well, it's interesting that, you know, Powell basically is saying that if an elected government is put into place and they create an Iraqi security force capable of protecting the country, he said, quote, if we accomplish those two things, then we've accomplished our mission. So this is a new mission. This is the mission that is, you know, after all the lies about going in there to get weapons of mass destruction, all the lies about liberating the Iraqi people to some degree, that now the mission is this specific. But it seems to me from all news coming out of Iraq, and even Brent Scowcroft, who was Bush Sr.'s
national security advisor.
Yeah, he is coming out against us, saying that, you know, it doesn't matter what you do, there's going to be civil war. It's a matter of when it's going to happen and how it's going to happen. And for what we're seeing coming out of Iraq, all the news is indicating that there is no effective Iraqi security force, and I don't see how it's going to happen. Do you?
It's not going to happen. Let's be down front about it. They are not going to be able to secure these elections. There were a substantial portion of the Iraqi population either will not vote or will not be able to vote because of safety and security concerns. It's going to create a huge schism about whether or not the election itself represents the true will of the Iraqi people. And who's going to be left holding the bag? America.
Right.
Because we're the ones that are over there.
Well, this is what's also very interesting, is in light of all this, we were talking about this, you know, I guess almost a year ago, or whenever they put Negroponte into power over there as the ambassador. You know, John Negroponte was ambassador to Honduras from 1981 to 1985. He was accused of helping the Reagan administration secretly send aid to Honduras in exchange for Honduran assistance to the Nicaraguan Contras, even though Congress had forbidden the administration from helping the Contras. He's denied these charges and was not found guilty of any of these accounts. Now, coincidentally then, that he's denied the charges and he said that there were no death squads operating in Honduras. He just happens to be there when they're deciding that maybe the Pentagon right now is debating whether or not to set up elite hit squads to target leaders of the Iraq insurgency in a new strategy based on tactics used against leftist guerrillas in Central America 20 years ago. And who just happens to be the ambassador assassin over there? John Negroponte, the guy on the ground for the neocon death cult to finish up the job in Iraq in terms of this. How's this going to work, Mark Riley? Where's he going to get these guys?
Well, he's talking about getting them from special forces, a combination of special forces, CIA kind of covert operation, where the government wouldn't admit that any of these hit squads existed in the first place. But and by the way, Alawi from Iraq actually signed on to all this. He thinks this is a great idea.
Well, why wouldn't he? Nothing he's doing is working.
Well, yeah, and what they're saying is, well, they'll go out and they will target the heads and the senior members of these different insurgent organizations and assassinate them. Now, the problem with this modus operandi is that they've gone after senior officials in Al-Qaeda, supposedly, gotten a number. Didn't Bush say during the election, we've gotten 75% of Al-Qaeda's top leadership?
Yeah, right.
And Al-Qaeda's not gone, are they?
No.
The 25% still there.
Yep.
So what makes them think that special forces knocking off Iraqi insurgents are going to kill the insurgency?
Well, it's actually playing on, doing it exactly like they're doing. You're just going to have these groups of people, I guess they're going to align, you know, high, you know, top-notch sort of Green Beret type guys, special forces guys,
mm-hmm.
with these Kurds, these special Kurdish forces,
the Peshmerga, yeah,
are being trained by the Israelis. Is
now that's going to be a problem because it has been established. Now the Kurds deny that the Israelis are training the Peshmerga. However, there has been documented evidence that the Israelis have been training some Kurdish militias. Now, if that's the case, and these Kurds turn up in these hit squads, and the insurgents find out about them, then they are now free to bring Israel into the game. Oh, yeah, it's the Israelis. You see how they, you know what I mean?
And Cambone is going to be the one overseeing this, you know, out of the Pentagon. And this is, like, he should have been fired. Rumsfeld should have been fired. I'm starting to realize that Bush has no power over letting these guys go. Bush has no vision or the capacity to go against any decisions that the neocon death cult makes because he just doesn't know, he wouldn't have the power to do that. He is being run. He is the blow monkey puppet of the Cheney regime's neocon death cult. And there's an alignment between, Cheney, Cambone, Rumsfeld, Wolfowitz, all these cats.
Yep.
And Bush is just their front man. Here's the liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. One, send telegram to Mahmoud Abbas, congratulating him on winning Palestinian elections. Assure him that Hollywood liberals will raise at least $50 million for his inauguration. Two, encourage rumors that Newt Gingrich might run for president. We could beat him, right? Right? We could, right? Three, have the people who just negotiated an end to Sudan's civil war sit down with Brad Pitt and Jennifer Aniston. This madness must end. Criticize Bush's choice of his new dog, Mrs. Beasley, as just one more token black in his inner circle. Five, quote of the day, just drop it in the conversation. It's been raining for four straight days in Los Angeles, and Michael Moore wins People's Choice Award. Connect the dots, people. It's coming, man, and it's going to be heavy. Wake up!
Look out. We're going to talk a little bit about what Congress is going to be up to this week. We're going to talk more about Iraq. We're going to talk about Social Security. We're going to talk about a whole bunch of stuff. So don't go anywhere here on Air America Radio.
Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
Mark Maron, you're listening to Air America Radio at 6 past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition.
Game over, man.
Good morning, Gene. This is Philosopher Kings and Queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians, tops and bottoms of all kinds. Good morning to my wife in Los Angeles, who I don't know if is going to... be listening. I want to reach out to also the people in San Diego. I'm going to be in your area, and I know this is going out to people who are listening early in the morning because we're on in real time there only.
Yeah.
But I will be at the Poway Performing Arts Center February 12th to do my one-man show, Jerusalem Syndrome, which has not been done in its entirety in years. It's a big event. So if you're up and you're listening, look forward to that. Mark Maron, me, will be performing at Jimmy Tingle's Off-Broadway Theater in Davis Square, Somerville, Massachusetts, on Friday and Saturday, January 21st and 22nd. Go to www.jtoffbroadway.com for info. You can go to our website, link up to my website. Riley.
Hey.
Dude, man, I come in this morning, I'm yelling. You heard me yelling in the other room.
Yeah.
I'm having a fight. Having a fight with my wife. This is hard stuff, man. It's hard because, I'm a pretty good man when it comes to respecting my wife's desire to do what she wants to do, obviously, and I'm in complete support of her comedy career and everything else, but it gets kind of difficult when you live on a different coast with somebody, and I want to live with her, you know, and I got this job here, and she thinks that it's going to be better for her out there, and we got the house out there, but, you know, I go through a weekend, you know, I was with her a week ago.
Yeah.
And then you go through a week without the person, and a weekend without the person, you're like, oh, man, this sucks, man. I'm lonely. This is some BS. You know, I got to, you know, what's going to happen? You know, I got to make, and then I call her up and I make her upset. because there's nothing. She's a very stubborn, you know, independent person. And, like, I find myself saying stuff that I regret. You know, I find myself saying things like, you know, well, I'm the one making the money, so why don't you come out here, you know? And it just hurts her feelings and makes her feel bad, you know? And I say it in anger, and, it, you know, and it got everything screwed up. I don't know how to deal with it. I don't know what the hell I'm going to do. I don't know how I'm going to make
it. Let me help.
Okay.
Never argue from anger.
Yeah.
Argue from logic. What you got to do, see, when you slip into that, I make the money, therefore you should, you're on this, you know.
But I didn't go all the way. I just dropped the hint.
I know, but you're on the pathway to hell when you do that.
Yeah.
You can't do it that way.
Hell, I'm living it. I know you can't see it on my face.
You can't do it that way. You know,
it's not even what I'm trying to do. I don't even know what I want to get at, because the truth of the matter is, if she comes out here because, you know, she feels guilty or she feels like she has to honor our marriage, if it doesn't go, like, that means that anything that happens or if anything that doesn't happen
is going to be your fault because you're the one that brought her here.
Right.
Okay.
So that's a given no matter what.
Well, maybe you should start by thinking, like, how can I psychologically convince her that it's her idea to come here? Or is she too stubborn for that sort of thing? Sometimes you can make that work, you know.
No,
I've done it.
No, I'm trying to do that.
Actually broken up with women. And had them break up with me because I put them in the psychological position where they had to break up.
Oh, so you did that thing where it's like, you know, I haven't got the guts to break this off, but I could certainly work
it. I can figure out a way
to make it hurt.
So she'll do it.
Yeah. I mean, I've done that before too. I don't want to lose this woman. I don't want to lose Mishnah. But, you know, the weird thing is like, it really comes down to, because she accuses me of being like, you know, all you want is domesticity. You want, you know, you should have had someone else for a wife. You should have been with your ex-wife if you want someone to be domestic. It's like, no, it's not about being domestic. It's about, I just want to be with you. You know what I mean? You just want to be with the
person.
Well,
you could always threaten to quit this job and go out there and be with her. She's not going to go for that either. I guarantee you.
I tried that one. Because then the other side of that is she doesn't.
Wow, you're pretty thorough.
Dude, what do you think I do all day? I'm working the angles, bro. I'm crushing the numbers.
You're good.
It really just comes down to it. It's like a Cold War, man. You know, yeah, of course I said that. But then she doesn't want me sitting at home resenting her for quitting the job that I like, you know, because I dig this gig. You know, it's just like you start to realize how difficult it can be in show business and have this thing. I wish somebody could tell me how to do this, because does true love, you know, eventually, you know,
conquer all?
Yeah. I mean, is it going to, you know, will that be the deciding factor? Because in my heart, we please call me if you have an idea for this. 866-303-2270.
I want to
hear from people who have managed long-distance relationships that have worked. I want to know that love conquers all in some situations. 866-303-2270. Someone's got to have some input on this. Am I doomed? Is this thing doomed to fade?
Nothing is ever doomed.
Well, the thing is like, I just, like, I believe in our relationship, and I believe in our marriage, and I believe in our love. But
90% of the battle right there. If you believe in it, it will happen for you.
But the other thing that I believe is that, you know, if, you know, you got to stay honest, and we got to stay just hoping that here's what I was going to say. I remember now. Is that you have to assume that eventually, like, the other person will believe this as well, and you realize that this is what life is about. You know, life is about the love. You know what I mean? It's not about the career. It's not about, you know, how much money you make. It's got to be about, you know, finding some sort of deep connection with another person and honoring that connection, because that is what makes life worth living. I'm starting to realize that now. Granted, it helps to have a job that I like. All right, but you know, I do.
Sure does.
I am starting to realize that what makes life, you know, incredibly, you know, good as a human being, plagued by despair, living in a world of crap, you know, trying to fight against, you know, things that are daunting out in the world. The one thing that makes life great is to be in love with somebody and to honor that love and to have that person with you.
Now, maybe, just maybe, these arguments are not the worst thing in the world for you. Maybe.
Huh?
Maybe these arguments aren't the worst thing in the world for you and Mishnah.
No, I know. You
maybe
know,
it's really therapeutic. Maybe you get all of this stuff out on the table. She gets her stuff on the table. You get your stuff on the table. And when the two of you cool off, God, I'm calling Dr. Riley.
Sorry.
Maybe that's the way it has to be. Maybe you got to go through this.
Yeah, I know. You know what I'm saying? And I agree that I agree that's true. But you know, you just don't want to say things that are too
I know
hurtful.
You never do, but you.
Yeah, sometimes it happens. But I believe that's true. I believe that if, especially if you're selfish, stubborn people, you have to fight in order to get to the meaty center.
Yeah.
It looks like we got some calls. If people have some help.
Whoa, you got a couple of people.
You know, we'll be back in a second with I guess this is about my relationship. It's 13 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Join the Morning Sedition. Call 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270. Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron. We're taking calls about, you know, relationship problems that I'm having. I'm hoping some people can shed a little wisdom, but I'm going to get into the Dream Diary first, which oddly reflects some relationship problems of another kind. Here's my dream from last night. I'm at a huge mansion in Malibu with Brad Pitt. He just split up with Jennifer Aniston, so he's pretty bummed out. He's got dark circles around his eyes, and he's been wearing the same bathrobe for 3 days. All the tabloids are spread out on his coffee table. Brad says, look at this crap, Mark. We're in the middle of the worst natural disaster in generations. Congress is trying to dismantle our democracy. We're at war in Iraq, and all the media wants to do is talk about whether I can find love again. Come on, man. I'm just not that interesting. And I'm like, I think, yeah, you take people away from all that. You understand that, Brad? You and Jennifer are what we have instead of a royal family. Americans don't have a concept of Sri Lanka, but everyone loved you in Troy. Brad glares at me. I say, okay, bad example. But they love you anyway, and your problems become their problems, man. You're their family. Brad swims down on the couch, opens a big bag of nacho cheese Doritos, and stares sadly out at the Pacific. It's hard being married and being me, he says, eating a Dorito and getting that orange dust on his fingers. Do you know what it's like to have the most beautiful woman in the world throw themselves at you? I almost say, yes, of course. But I stop myself and say, no, not really. Brad says, it's brutal. And if you had a shot at Angelina Jolie, what would you do? I say, that's a completely different dream, Brad, and I'm not reading that one on the air. Brad slams his fist into the wall. How am I supposed to go on a date now? The paparazzi follows me everywhere. No woman will want to deal with the hassle, man. I'm Brad Pitt, and I can't get a date. I say, if there was only some way you could disguise yourself. He eats another Dorito and thinks about that for a minute. Then he says, yeah, maybe you're right. Come on, let's go over to Clooney's. 6 months pass until I see Brad again. He weighs 300 pounds, has a beard, and he's working at an auto parts store in Sedalia, Missouri. He's dating Paris Hilton, who weighs 220 pounds, and works at the local 7-Eleven. And they've never been happier. I woke up and my bed was filled with Fram oil filters.
Ooh.
Fram oil filters.
Hey.
All right, I guess we're going to do this. We're going to talk, we got people coming up with, you know, we're going to talk about the Congress with our guest, Bob Cusack, in the next segment. But right now we're going to talk about love. All right, Katiana, what do you got? What do you got, Katiana? You there?
Wait a minute.
Well,
there
hello?
She is.
There you are.
Yowie, good morning.
How are you?
Desert Wildcat gets up at 4:30 in the morning.
Aww,
to listen to you guys.
You're sweet.
You guys are special.
Thank
hey,
you.
Hey, babe.
Yeah.
What the heck do you want in life?
I don't know.
You're jumping up and down like a 2-year-old.
I know.
You want a schizo? You sound like the world news.
Mm-hmm.
You want domestic, home base. You want a democratic election. You want Negro Ponte slut chef in the bedroom. You know, what is it you do want? You want a mother? Multi-personality woman.
Uh-huh.
The last time I did that, I got locked up. Okay?
All right, so you tell me to figure out what I want.
I tried to satisfy my man. I'm a good Catholic girl.
Uh-oh.
It took me 59 years to figure out that's not a working deal.
Uh-huh. Oh, right, okay, so you're saying...
No, you're panting like a dog. This is feline philosophy.
Okay.
Don't do that to me.
Okay,
it makes me crazy.
Okay.
Take a deep breath.
Okay, I'm good.
This is the most extraordinary stream of consciousness I've heard since Timothy Leary.
Yeah.
You go, guys.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I'm going to try and parse through what you just told me. I'm probably going to have to listen to it again later.
Make it simple now.
Okay.
Here's the deal. You've got the world view. You want domestic home base,
uh-huh,
quiet, for your creativity genius to unfold like a flower.
Okay.
Okay.
Now, okay, well, I'll try and get her to understand it. I'm going to use your words, Katiana.
Well, you better get a baseball bat and a good rat burger, because it ain't going to work.
Oh,
I'm getting a lot of conflicting messages. Katiana,
that's the deal.
Okay.
You're putting them out. That's what you're getting back.
Okay, all right, I get it.
And
now, yeah.
Oh, this is some, like, reverse psychology stuff.
No, it's good.
No.
Here. You want a little of this? How's that?
Wow, sounds like my sister.
All right, thank you. Thank you, Tatiana. Thank you for calling.
We appreciate that. Words of wisdom from our listening audience.
Oh, my God.
Who's next?
All right, Joanna in California.
Hey, Joanna.
Good morning, Mark and Mark.
How you doing?
Can you
remember the old saying that absence makes the heart grow fonder?
That is true.
That's what you have to think about. And the other thing is, you're at a critical point in your career, Mark, and I'm being real serious now. Your radio career is fueling your comedy career, and vice versa. We're coming down to Southern California to see you in at Poway.
Wow.
Looking forward to it. And I'm sure Misha understands that because she's interested in her career.
Yeah, absolutely.
So she's not. My husband's sleeping right now. I'm up here at 4:20 in the morning writing a trial brief. So you're not together all the time, even when you're married and living together.
Sure.
Because we have different careers. So both of you hang in there. I'd like to see her perform sometime, too.
Well,
she's going to be in Northern California.
Yeah, she opens for me when I'm out there. In Poway, I'm doing the Jerusalem Syndrome, the one-man show. So, you know, but I appreciate that, and I think you're right. And you know, to be honest with you, when we do see each other, it's amazing because, you know, when you only see someone, you know, once or twice a month for a few days, it's like a honeymoon every time.
Exactly.
But I guess on some level, not unlike the fairly cryptic Katiana who just called me, said that, you know, there's a part where you just want to have it all. You know what I mean?
Nobody has it all. Even the people who say they have it all don't have it all.
Thank God.
You know, I try to tell my wife that all the time, that not everything is as it seems in public, that's for sure.
Gavin Newsom and his wife.
Yeah, what happened?
Breaking up.
Are they?
They were thought to be the perfect couple. And they're both super people. We love them here in the Bay Area.
Yeah. Why are they breaking up?
Why are they breaking up?
Yeah.
Coast to coast careers, and they're both beautiful people.
No, that's not helping me.
You know,
gee, now you've done it, Joanna.
They're breaking up because they can't keep it together because
maybe they're breaking up because they want to have it all.
Okay,
and so you can't make that your goal. You can't be a domestic goddess and have a career too.
Yeah, I don't know if I. Okay, you're right. You're right. It's just like I don't feel like I'm expecting her to be a domestic goddess. I just want her to be here for me.
Emotionally, and that's what really matters.
That is absolutely true. That is absolutely true. Thank you for your call. See you down there in Poway.
All right.
Thank
you,
Joanna.
You got a listener who said they're coming down from Northern California to check you out in San Diego.
Yeah. Now, so
life is good, man.
Well, I'm doing a lot of work to get that show back in my head. You know, that's no small order. This is a big monologue, and you know, I haven't done it in a few years, and it's been kind of cool. You know, it really has. All right, let's say we got someone in the truck. Hey, Brand, what's going on, Brand?
Hey, Brand.
Hey.
Yeah.
I drive 48 states over, you know, continental U.S., and I get to see my wife about once or twice a month.
Yeah.
And you just got to focus on the time that you spend with her, you know, make that, instead of focusing on the part time you're part.
That's absolutely true. Now, when you see your wife, this is a problem I have occasionally, is that, you know, when you don't see them a lot, sometimes, do you ever get in fights when you have just a few days to be with them?
On the phone when we're apart.
Okay.
When we're on the phone when we're apart about the same stuff, but you just kind of let it go. After 9 years of being out here on the truck, you just
look forward
let
to
it go.
Where are you driving now? Are you in the truck now?
Yeah, I'm in Pennsylvania right now.
All
right,
man. Well, thanks for your call. It's very helpful.
Thanks, Brian.
He's right. You know, I mean, that's a weird thing, though. Yeah, I'll tell you honestly, Riley, that's the thing about fighting. A lot of times, what I'm learning is that when you get in a fight, 9 times out of 10, I've said this before, 9 times out of 10, if you're yelling at a woman, you're really just saying, why can't you be my mommy? Why? All right. Now, the other thing is that a lot of times you get in fights, as we were talking about before, there's one thing about getting in fights that help you grow. There's another thing about getting in fights that are a way that you're trying to connect emotionally. It's a bad thing if the only way you can connect with someone emotionally is to upset them. And sometimes I'm guilty of that.
Yeah, well, you know, you use what you feel you have at your disposal. That's what it is.
Mm.
I mean, you figure if you have that, and if that's a pathway that you know accomplishes that result, you use it.
But it's not healthy, and it can only work
against you. No, it's not healthy, but you use it anyway. You don't. When you get emotional, you don't think about what's healthy. That's the problem.
I wish I was more political about these kind of things and more, you know, I just don't, I'm not really good at keeping things hidden and working too many angles. It's all very immediate to me, and I'm sure it's all going to work out. I guess I just feel kind of bad. And I want to thank you for calling people.
Yeah,
and,
people.
And help me out. That was something we've never done before, really. And I feel kind of, I'm a little choked up. So we got Bob Cusack coming up next. He's the managing editor of The Hill. He's going to give us an update on last week's congressional get-together.
Yeah, this is a strange time before the inauguration, the Congress kind of maneuvering and figuring out what it's going to do.
Yeah,
this is Air America Radio.
On Air America Radio.
Hey, 34 past the hour, Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley. Thank you.
Excuse me. Thank you.
God bless you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Some pollutants in the atmosphere.
Is that what it is?
I think.
Yeah?
It's either that or Jimmy over there.
Maybe just some little hairs left that, you know, they cut off of your mustache and went up in your nose.
There. Yeah, you know, that's possible because there is one he missed.
Yeah. Well, thank you again for all your calls and helping me move through a small relationship predicament. You know, every week, starting today, Morning's Edition is going to pay tribute to those recently departed individuals who have changed our world forever. Whether they left the world for better or worse, their passing deserves notice. So we bring you our morning remembrance, as reported by correspondent Mort Mortensen.
A world mourns. 88-year-old E.R. Hager, clothing magnate and founder of Hager Slacks Company, died after a long illness where at times it seemed like his life was literally hanging by a thread. Excuse me. Hager was found dead at his Dallas home, his tab waist stretchable trousers expanding for one last time as the inevitable result of rigor mortis. Got something in my eye, sorry. The son of Lebanese immigrants, Hager helped build a family clothing store into a national brand of slacks and shirts that never wrinkled and always smelled weird when you sweat. Excuse me. Ooh. Maintain. Mr. Hager is survived by his wife of 62 years and lots of remnants. Frank Thomas, one of Disney's 9 old men, dead at 92. Frank Thomas, one of the celebrated 9 old men of Disney animation, is no longer with us. Thomas had been in declining health recently after being held in one of the secret holding cells beneath Disneyland for littering. I'm sorry. Excuse me. Oh, sorry.
You all right, man?
Yeah, I don't know. Somebody bring a cat in here? Damn allergies. Anyway, after serving as a soldier in World War II, Thomas went to work for Walt Disney, where he helped create such memorable characters as the Wicked Stepmother in Cinderella, the Queen of Hearts in Alice in Wonderland, and Captain Killer Crowdhead in Peter Pan. Pull it together, man. Animation historians say that Thomas will go down as one of the greatest animators of all time. He never had his head cryogenically frozen in a metal cylinder. He was chopping onions. I told you guys, stop with the onions already.
You all right?
I'm all right.
Okay, all right.
Can I have another tissue, please?
Yeah, I'll get you one.
Thank you. Thomas, whose work set the standards by which all character animation is judged today, died quietly at his home, with his legs straight up in the air and weird squiggly lines above his head. His eyes. I can't read anymore. My eyes are so... My eyes are full of... something in my eyes.
Oh, yeah.
Reed Irvine, self-appointed media watchdog, dead at 82. Reed Irvine, founder of Accuracy in Media, an organization devoted to exposing liberal bias in American journalism, is dead at the age of 82. The cause? Probably from being real stupid and ugly and having a dumb name. Good riddance, you jackass. Look, I know one of you guys brought Catherine into the studio, right? You know how I get.
Sorry, man.
Both together.
Oh, boy.
This has been this week's Morning Remembrance. Until next time, who's chopping onions?
You be all right?
Yeah, I'm okay, man. Thanks for holding my hand during that.
Not a problem, buddy. You have a rough job. I understand. It's hard.
Well, at least people mean something to me.
Yeah, I know, man.
This is important.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll see you later, buddy. You going to be all right?
Yeah, somebody's chopping on you.
Yeah. See you later. All right, so we'll be, I guess you're coming back next week with some more of those. And
whatever.
Oh, fooled me. That was, of course, Mort Mortensen, and that's going to be a weekly thing we're going to be doing here, the remembrance, the morning remembrance. Right now on the phone, the managing, come on, buddy. Come on, managing editor of The Hill. He was with us last week. He's our guy on the Congress. It's Bob Cusack. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How's it going?
Oh, it's going well. Going well.
So last week was what's happening? What's happening in the 109th Congress? Let's just get right down to it. They met for a few days, and what did we learn? What's going on?
Well, the funny thing is they come back for a few days, and then they go. They leave town for a couple of weeks until inauguration, so it's kind of an odd schedule.
Is that just protocol in terms of, like, you got the new guys, you want to integrate the new guys, you want to lay out what the menu is for what the year's coming up, and then they just do wait till the inauguration?
Yeah, it's a lot of house cleaning. Who's going to be on what committee? Who's going to be on what committee chair? And in the case of Republicans, if you're not loyal enough, you can be removed as a committee chair. So there's a little bit of that. And they'll be back for inauguration.
So is there any real work going to happen ever?
Maybe at the end of the month. It's going to be pretty busy. I think there are really no signs yet that there's going to be any bipartisanship in the new Congress. And but the question is whether the president's initiatives can get through the Senate. Because the Senate's a little bit different this time around, obviously more conservative, but still – they're going to need to pick off some Democrats if they're going to move anything.
So you're saying that it's just going to be a completely one-sided nightmare? Is that what I'm getting?
I think both sides are pretty mobilized against one another already on the big-ticket items like Social Security reform.
Bob, why do you think it is that there are some conservatives both in the House and Senate that seem to be sending signals to the president that they have problems with various components of his initiatives, like Iraq, like Social Security, like the whole issue of victims' rights? Can the Democrats take advantage of any of these, people like Lindsey Graham and others who seem to be parting company with the president on issues?
I think so. I think the Democrats can work in a bipartisan way, but when it comes right down to it, I think that the proposal that moves is going to be one that is going to probably be easy for Democrats to oppose. So I don't see, and it's not on the conservative side, I just think these guys are emboldened a little bit. The president did win, but it wasn't a Ronald Reagan win. So they don't feel shy in criticizing the president when they feel it's just.
Mm. Do you think the president is going to be, is there going to be a Democrat that does any of the president's bidding that you can see? Is there going to be someone he's going to align himself with?
Well, it's going to be tough because Zell Miller is now gone, and then John Breaux is gone.
Mm-hmm.
Breaux helped him get the tax cuts and the Medicare bill through. So right now there could be Senator Nelson out of Nebraska, but right now I don't see a Breaux or a Zell Miller, certainly, remaining in the Senate.
And tell me a little bit about some of the Republicans that are you think might stand up against the president this year.
Well, Senator Tom Coburn, who just got elected from Oklahoma, he's a real stickler for spending. And he has been kind of a maverick when he was in the House, always opposing his House leadership, and he's already sending signals that he'll oppose the president, especially if the president doesn't drastically cut federal spending.
Mm-hmm.
So he's one of the leading ones that we're watching.
Bob, what will happen if there does emerge either a Senator Nelson or someone else that I guess you would call a blue dog Democrat? How would, for example, Harry Reid, who now is in charge of the Senate minority, how is he going to deal with that?
Well, I think that's a great question. I don't know. I think that his leadership, people are going to be looking to make sure that there is no new Senator Breaux or new Senator Zell Miller. I mean, he really needs to keep his caucus in line. When Senator Daschle was running for reelection last year, a lot of people say he got a little bit distracted. His press message wasn't on because he was worried about winning his race in South Dakota. There are a lot of eyes on Senator Reid. I mean, there were some people thinking that he would shut down Senator Boxer last week when she challenged the election, because that was an issue that some people thought, sure, there are some problems in Ohio, but it didn't make the difference. But he let her go through, and she signed on a letter, so they had that. But there are some concerns within the Democratic caucus that he needs to have full control of the party.
Shut her down. I don't know why all of them didn't stand up, to be honest with you. I mean, it certainly not, it didn't seem to me that anyone would have had anything to lose by supporting that thing.
Well, I mean, Senator Boxer was the only one who voted to overturn it, and I just think that a lot of people, and Senator Schumer said this too, that he didn't see the clear evidence to vote against it, and it was something that Republicans loved to stand up and say they were aghast at and that kind of thing, but I think privately some of them like the fact that they could challenge Democrats on that issue to start out the year.
Bob, with criticism of Defense Secretary Rumsfeld seemingly on the rise, do you get a sense that there's any movement in Congress to pressure the president to get rid of the guy?
I think his Rumsfeld's been in trouble for a while, but he's done a good job of surviving. Senator Lott and Senator McCain, Senator Hagel, three Republicans have said they want him out, if not right now, then soon. So I think the White House has gotten the message that Rumsfeld's time is not long, and I'd be surprised if he was still in the cabinet in 2006, but I'm a little bit surprised he's still here.
Well, so am I.
Is that Congress's call to make, though, really?
If they apply enough pressure and they say, listen, this guy's a liability, and they do it a united way, yes, they can really make the call. They can really pressure, but they're not united. Senator Frist and the Speaker of the House, Dennis Hastert, they've indicated that they support Rumsfeld. So he's safe for now. But I think the message has gotten to the White House that he can stay for a while, but not too long.
No chance that Iraq funding money could be held hostage to getting rid of Rumsfeld, is there?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question. Maybe. I mean, there's certainly in the Senate, all it takes is one senator to make a demand and hold up a bill. Politically, that would be difficult if one senator kind of risked that, because then you look unpatriotic because you're not getting the armor to the troops. But certainly there'll be some tough talk when that package comes around, which I guess could be in the range of another $75 to $80 billion, and that's going to be pretty soon.
Have you seen John Kerry lately?
No, John Kerry wasn't around last week, and he hasn't been around in a while. His staff is promising that he's going to play a more prominent role in legislative strategy, but we haven't seen him that much.
Okay. Well, any surprises we should be looking for? You got any speculations, any prophecies, any visions?
I think this is going to be one of the nastiest Congresses in a long time, and that's saying a lot, because sometimes it gets really nasty. I think this is going to be extremely partisan. I think the issues are going to divide Republicans and Democrats, and it's just going to be a contest of who can keep their party in check.
So it's going to be exciting.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Bob Cusack, thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again soon, maybe in a week or so.
Yeah, thank
okay,
you.
Okay,
thanks,
bet.
Bob.
That's Bob Cusack, managing editor of The Hill. If you've got any input as to you know, what you want to see happen to Donald Rumsfeld, or any sort of speculations about this Congress, 866-303-2270, or any sort of political actions you've been taking and what you think we need to do, I'd love to hear from you. 866-303-2270 is the number. Mark and I will be here in a second. When we come back, it's 46 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition. Call 866-303-2270. Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Back to the hour. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Yes, it is.
You're listening to Morning Sedition. We're taking your calls at 866-303-2270. I got a mouthful, so now I'll try it. I'm trying to, like, I'm sitting here like, I'm going to get away with this. They're not going to know I got a mouthful of sandwich. And then I start to realize, like, Wait a minute, I'm the host of the show. How long do I think I can keep the sandwich in this pocket in the side of my mouth?
You want me to talk for a minute? I'll talk for a minute while you get rid of it, okay?
Okay.
Because we've been talking, we talked about Kuczak, a little bit about Donald Rumsfeld, who I really believe that Donald Rumsfeld is the soft underbelly at this point of the Republican Party, and that the Democrats, if they had any nads and if they got their act together, they could get rid of Donald Rumsfeld. With the help of some conservatives, I'm not above, you know, making common cause with people I disagree with if a larger purpose is served. And I got to tell you, Donald Rumsfeld is bad for America as Secretary of Defense. Let him go get one of them lobbying gigs he's got waiting for him when he leaves. Let him go do whatever it is he wants to do. Let him take his wire rim glasses and go to Alaska if he wants.
The soft underbelly. That almost makes him seem cute.
Yeah, well, no, the administration's soft underbelly.
Yeah, the weak
the
spot.
Vulnerable
yeah.
underbelly. The part if you cut it, it bleeds.
That's what we're going to do.
Yeah.
We're going to gut the administration. John in Columbus, Ohio, what's going on, buddy?
Hey, John.
Hey, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
First thing I think we need to do is give all the Democrats their testosterone shot so they grow some cojones.
Okay.
This cojones thing's starting to catch on, huh?
Yeah, because what they need to realize is what Tom Paine said a long time ago. The job of a patriot is to protect his country from his government.
That's right.
And they have forgotten all of this. Everybody's sitting around trying to cover their own butt. You know, nobody's trying to really stand up for it. They all should have stood up for their Barbara Boxer.
Absolutely. That's right. The ovaries.
I can't fathom them.
The ovaries won that day.
You know what's going to happen? You know what the problem, though, is, John? The problem is people who think like you, and there are a lot of people who think like you, including me and including Mark. There are some folks that are going to get disillusioned, and the Democrats are going to get bitten in the butt in future elections because people are going to take them to task for not having any guts.
That's the whole point. Yeah. I'm so sick of the spineless wonders, and it's amazing.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's not all I've got to say. But Columbus, Ohio, if you've been anywhere near here during this whole electoral process, they could have seen it. And anybody who had any eyeballs could see it. But no, anyway.
Yeah,
I understand.
We hear you, John. Yeah, the voter suppression, the tactics to obstruct people's ability to vote in Ohio was a real, there was evidence of that. They didn't, you know, like he's saying,
yeah.
Anybody could have seen that. Once you get into the machines and math problems and whether or not they were fixed and who owns them and what that means, that's a different world. But the real true evidence of profiling and, you know, and stifling the black vote in Ohio is real.
And that it was done by a black guy who now, by the way, who sent out a fundraising letter for his 2006 gubernatorial campaign that was accompanied by a request for illegal campaign contributions, because in the state of Ohio, there is no such thing as a corporate donation. It's illegal in the state. Yet Ken Blackwell sent out a fundraising letter asking for corporate donations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, unbelievable. I'm going to kiss a little butt right now and say that, you know, last week, you know, when Barbara Boxer did make that stand, we were constantly referring to NADS.
Yeah.
We were constantly, and the truth of the matter is that it was ovaries. It wasn't NADS, and there's no reason that a woman, you know, has to have NADS. And actually,
you're right, of course.
And NADS does apply to both ovaries and the testicles.
Yes. Testicules?
Testicules.
Okay.
That's a weird word. You got to be clinical about that stuff, you know what I mean?
When you say that.
I was watching some movie last night. What the hell was I watching? Oh, I was watching Bull Durham. That's a dirty movie.
Oh, did you know that?
I mean, I just hadn't seen it in years, and I didn't remember that as being part of it. I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
So I'm like,
hey, man, that made a whole generation of guys want Susan Sarandon real bad.
Speaking of that, did you see this? Columbia House. Hold on, Mark Riley, talk for me.
Yeah, okay. Columbia House. The publishing company, or is that the record company?
The record company. Columbia House, famous for its 12 CDs for a penny, record clubs, will launch its own adult video club with Playboy Entertainment at the end of the month. They want a piece of the cake, man. They want a piece of the $12 billion porn business. These are the guys that rooked, you know, every sort of like, you know, 9 to 15-year-old kid into, you know, getting
12 CDs for a penny?
A lifetime of records.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember when I was like 13, I'm like, oh, this is amazing, 11, 12 for a CD, I'm going to get all these, you know, and I got all the records I want, right? So then you get the free ones, and then you got to buy like 10 at regular price or 4 at regular price over the next 4 years. Seems like not a problem, but the truth of the matter is none of them are regular price.
Yeah.
So now what's going to happen is people are going to be, yeah, they may be doing this on the down low, and they think that it's not going to be connected with the records. It's not going to be marketed to the same type of people. But when that package comes every month with the, you know,
brown paper.
With the, whatever you want to call it. I can't say.
Debbie does dishes.
Yeah, yeah.
Part 12.
Hey, whatever they are, those packages are going to get kind of suspect, and you open them, and then you're sort of like, I guess I got to stay. You know what? I think we've been here for a long time.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, this whole segment, we had taken the trip to Rileytown, but.
Stand clear of the doors.
But we're Columbus. Wow. Yeah. So that, you know, that's going to get a whole new generation of people.
What's that address again?
Addicted to pornography. Don't do it.
I'm only kidding.
For the rest of your life, you'll be getting porno movies every week. That's the way they do it.
And you have a problem with that?
Yeah, kind of.
Okay.
I have a little problem. I'd rather just get it for free in small segments. That way my guilt is minimal.
Well, we're going to be talking about one of my homies in the next hour.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about a little bit of his transgressions. And, of course, from BuzzMachine.com, Jeff Jarvis joins us here on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
I'm Mark Maron. It's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher, kings and queens, working class heroes, and all you people out there that have, you know, done everything you can to help the world make it a better place. How's that for an optimistic hello for Monday morning? Man, we have come full circle here this morning, Riley. I will tell you that.
Yes, we have.
I came in here yelling on the phone, and I hate myself when I do that. I'm yelling on the phone at my wife in Los Angeles. It's 12:30 her time, 3:30 our time, right?
And 8:30 British time.
Yeah. Well, good. We can play this game all day.
There you go. Right.
But now, I got some advice from the listeners. Me and you talked, and, you know, we covered some of the world's news, and I feel a little bit better about myself. Everything's going much better than when the day started. Am I right, Kalo, or what?
You're right.
Yeah, man. This has been
therapeutic for everybody, everybody involved.
Except for Wayne Gilman.
Yeah.
Never mind.
This is hilarious. Like, on every break now, it's the Gilman Riley Dozens Fest, man. They're going at each other.
No, I'm an innocent man.
You're an innocent man. Poor Gilman. You like, listen to me, I'm not siding with anybody, but boy, he just buckles eventually. he kind of goes slouching out. He's like, all right, Riley, that's fine. You go on ahead. So let's get into some news, Riley. What do you say?
You want to get into some news? Why not? There's a lot of stuff going on.
Let's talk about your buddy Armstrong.
Armstrong Williams.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Black conservative commentator, talk show host, TV, radio guy, one-man career.
Opportunist is what the word is, right?
Well, I don't know, man. Let's put it this way. Armstrong, now, for those of you who don't know, Armstrong got paid $241,000 to shill for No Child Left Behind. This was a contract that apparently was led by the Education Department through a PR firm, not Armstrong's, because Armstrong actually does have his own PR firm. And Armstrong said that he stepped over the line, he blurred the line between, what he did as a commentator and what he did as a small businessman, which is a very interesting way of putting a PR firm, for
right.
God's sake. But this is something that I think a lot of people in our business think goes on every now and then. You know, that there are people that are paid to shill. Yeah, but we don't get it.
But let me ask you a question.
$250,000, you think?
What is the real difference on some level? What is the difference between being paid to shill and being, given political favors, being given access, being given, special treatment, being given, job advances? I mean, what is the real difference?
A check for $241,000 may be part of the difference.
The
other guys get paid.
Right.
But, I mean, this was, see, what this, the problem that people have with this is that Armstrong is this multimedia guy who has is a voice on a lot of different media.
Yeah.
He's on television, he's on radio, he was on America's Black Forum, he has a syndicated column, or at least he did. All these different outlets, if somebody gives you $250,000 and says, well, we expect you now to promote No Child Left Behind through these various media, and you don't tell anybody as you appear. Because, see, I'm all weekend since I heard this, Mark, I'm racking my brain because I was on with Armstrong three different times between the Republican convention and the election.
So he basically signed, he's their bitch now on some level. That's what that check means. You're our bitch now. So
yeah.
You got to do this. If you don't do it, then, you know, you're going to pay for it politically, you're going to pay for it career-wise, and you got to give us our money back.
Well, I don't even think they have to threaten him that way. I
right.
think Armstrong was, because he believed in No Child Left Behind, because he's believed in school vouchers, he's believed in that whole conservative mantra about how to improve education. It was a no-brainer for him. It's like taking money for doing something he would have done anyway.
But so how are you going to prove that he broke the law here if that's basically what he does anyway? That's what he does
that
anyway.
Won't be him. He won't have broke the law. He didn't do anything illegal. All he did was accept money. The issue is whether the Education Department broke the law by giving money to for propaganda purposes, essentially.
I tell you, I saw him on TV being interviewed. I've never seen someone worse at doublespeak than this guy.
You want to hear a little?
Yeah.
You want to hear a little?
Sure.
You want to hear Armstrong? Now, I hold no malice against people I disagree with politically.
Now, I can tell, you're getting real joy out of this because you know you got this guy beat.
Here's a little snatch of my man Armstrong Williams talking to NPR, where he, by the way, is employed as a commentator. The issue? Integrity.
All I have is my integrity. And if people can't trust that, I don't have anything. And I feel, as a commentator, even though I'm not a journalist, I should be held to the same standard.
Well, we are holding you to the same standard, Armstrong. That's
yeah.
the whole problem.
Well, this is a guy that says, why some people think it's unethical. He said, I can understand that someone would make that assessment, but it's not true. It's basically like saying, well, they'd be right, but they're wrong.
But they're wrong, yeah.
What is that? How bad at that can you be?
You know what's really the saddest thing about all this?
Huh.
Armstrong's people, his fellow travelers, his conservative cronies, have been the first ones to jump all over him about this. What was he thinking?
Yeah, that guy did it.
Yeah.
He's the fall guy.
Yeah, where's my check? If he's getting 240, where's mine?
Well, there are people paying the other conservatives to dump on Armstrong. Like, here's $100,000. Push this guy out there, and he's the scapegoat.
Yeah. Well, you know what? It gave me an idea, man.
Yeah.
Because we talk about issues here.
Occasionally.
So why don't we just, like, open things up and solicit, if anybody wants to pay us to talk about an issue... Come on.
That was the funny thing.
Send your checks.
Yeah. Well, remember, some guy did send us a gift to go out to dinner.
Sure did.
He said, some guy sent us each $100 to go out to dinner.
Yeah.
And we sat there for like a week going, what are you going to do?
What are you going to do?
Are we supposed to do this? Is there something wrong with this?
Yeah.
I went out to dinner.
Me too. But I guess that means that we roll over for little as opposed to Armstrong.
But that was just a gift. But there was a lot of times where during the beginning of the network where people just assumed that we were being funded by the Democratic Party, that the money behind us was, you know, somehow funneling through the Democratic Party, and that was our job to hold up that end of things.
Yeah.
And it couldn't have been farther from the truth. I mean, how long did it take us to really sort of like say, all right, let's get on board and do this thing with John Kerry, even though we didn't think initially that he was like our guy. But,
we had a lot of off-air conversations about that. We went back and forth a lot of times about how far we would go
right.
in supporting John Kerry.
And after a certain point, we decided that, you know, as Democrats and as, you know, this was our party's nomination, that we had to do it because, you know, that's what you do.
Yeah,
you
but he didn't pay us. He didn't give us any $250.
He didn't even come on the show.
Yeah, I know. We could have gotten something from the campaign, though, don't you think? I mean,
very disappointed with them.
And you know what's really weird?
Mm.
Armstrong actually managed to con Steve Harvey. You know Steve Harvey.
Well, that's like conning a con man.
Well, you know, he's got a morning radio show in L.A.
Sure.
So apparently he talked Steve Harvey into interviewing Rod Paige, the outgoing education secretary. And by the way, the person whose desk this eventually must stop at. Okay, Rod Paige must have signed off on this at some point. This was Education Department money he was using.
Right.
But the bottom line is he got Steve Harvey to carry his water for him, too. I don't know if he gave Steve any money for it, but what do you think? Want to speculate a little?
Well, you know, I think that, you know, entertainers have always wanted to, they like to align themselves with politicians. They like to be part of that process. It makes them feel validated and important and makes them feel like they're touching real power. It's sort of a weird symbiotic thing that goes on.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that probably had something to do with it. You know, I don't know what his Steve Harvey's politics are, but, you know, the more money people make, the more conservative they become in their ideological point of view in a lot of times.
Well, yeah, and I mean, he actually did talk to Rod Paige a couple of times as well. I mean, look, Armstrong clerked for Clarence Thomas.
Yeah.
He also worked in Strom Thurmond's office. So, you know, Armstrong has no real
He's got more identity problems than one. It's quarter past the hour. We'll be back in a second with more on this. You're listening to Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning Sedition.
We are the highest rated, most respected news show in America.
On Air America Radio.
Good morning, 19 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. I'm here with Mark Riley.
Hi!
As I am every day, as we are every day on Morning Sedition here on Air America Radio. Turning out to be a pretty good morning.
A pretty good Monday morning, absolutely. Nobody wants to come back to work on Monday morning, but we're here, we're enthused, we're into it, we're having fun with it.
You know, I tell you, man, as I said before, I didn't know how it was going to turn out. Mm-hmm. I didn't know how it was going to turn out because I was in a bad head, having the weird sort of like seemingly unsurmountable, you know, argument about how we're going to continue our relationship on, you know, different coasts with me and my wife.
That's you and your wife, not me and you.
No. Me and you, I think, are fine.
We're fine.
No. When we need a couple therapists, Riley, me and you, we'll have them come right in here. We'll devote a day to it.
There you go.
God forbid that happens. You know, but I think that does happen on shows sometimes. Has that ever, do you, in your knowledge about radio shows, has there ever been like a morning team that actually did couple therapy on the air?
No, not really. Although there have been, you know, a couple of situations where lawsuits have been filed and things like that. But that's a whole different story.
Yeah, I think it would be interesting because a lot of times, you know, people, you know, aren't married on the air, but sometimes they spend enough time with each other over the years that they develop a dynamic. I'm sure it's happened.
There was a couple here in New York, Ed and Pagene Fitzgerald, who were on the air in New York for like 5 zillion years.
Yeah.
Since the dawn of radio they were on. And, you know, it was kind of like, I think it was like a gardening show or something. It was very, you know, it was something that they were both into. And they worked together perfectly. And eventually they did it out of their house. They didn't have to come into work.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, we're not that close.
That was then. This is now.
I couldn't imagine, like, sleeping in your basement. You know, kind of like, you know, hey, Mark.
Hey.
Hey, it's me. It's time to do the show. No, Larson's here. They're coming in. The van's outside. We just saw you get up and come on down and do the show.
Yeah. Give me an ISDN line. We'll make it work.
All right. Newsweek is reporting that the U.S. is considering a new strategy for Iraq called the Salvador Option.
Uh-huh.
You know, death squads, assassination, stuff like that. Fortunately, they've already got an old pro in the embassy. That's the U.S. ambassador assassin, John Necroponte. And Ray Ray brought us his hair, like, burned on one side. His hair, like, I don't know. It's weird because one side looks normal. And the other side, it smelled that burnt hair smell.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyways, well, here's Necroponte's Palm Pilots for today. 8 a.m., wake up, unlock metal security roll gates on breakfast. 9 a.m., audition applicants for secret assassination and kidnapping squads. Note, seeking motivated, self-starting team players who are willing to kill other team players on command. That's the assassin's job. 11 a.m., make brief appearances at Green Zone Block Party. Wave from inside armored Humvee. That'll make the troops love him. 1 p.m., call Bush, tell him no news is good news. Note, no news could also mean that we're in a communications blackout due to mortar fire. 3 p.m., prepare for upcoming Iraqi elections. Urge candidates not to go negative. All right, treat... No. 4 p.m., meet with Iraqi officials. No, check tote board to see who's still alive. That's a horrendous image that they actually have a tote board that they just sort of pull names off of or cross them out or erase them, like in police stations. 9 p.m., drift off to sleep, formulating an exit strategy for John Negroponte. Look at this. I got some emails, too, of people reaching out to me about my little long-distance relationship problems.
Come on with them.
Oh, man. Well, this one.
Want me to read them? I'll read them.
Well, I'm trying to find the shorter ones that I already read through. I don't want to read one that I haven't read through yet on the air and just be like, wait, I didn't want that. Whoa, Tiger, you need to keep in mind that while you are happy with your place in this world, your wife is still searching for her. So ask yourself if you would think it was a good idea if the positions were reversed. Good luck. Oddly, a point made to me by my wife.
So now
there's a consensus. It seems that is true. You know, I feel that I've been supportive. I feel that I've been there for her. I feel that I want the best for her. But after a certain point, it's like, well, you know, I mean, things are going pretty good. I mean, you feel dug in out there. You have friends and everything. But what have you really got to show for it? Why can't you just do it here? Because I know the comedy scenes here is good. But, you know, she's also doing the right thing out there. So there is a certain amount of, I guess, empathy that I'm not...
really, out of my own selfishness, I'm not saying, well, what would that really be like? Because she said that to me this morning. And she goes, do you really know where I'm at and where I feel like? And, of course, I said, yes, I know where you're at. What do you think, I'm stupid? Who do you think knows you better than me? Of course I know where you're at. Now, why aren't you here with me in my life? You know, oh, man, this morning goes on. See, I just had that moment where I was feeling great, and now I'm feeling bad.
Don't feel bad.
Okay. Hi, Mark. I'm sure that Mishnah loves you as much as you hate yourself. Okay, Smarty.
Who said that? No. Jonathan Larson?
No. Oh. If she lived with you constantly, she might start to give in to the self-hate and start to agree with you. the fact that she is there for you emotionally and that the fireworks are still there when you have time together must be great. And there's always webcams and cyber sex just in case you need a little more. Have you thought about getting yourself a Vermont teddy bear? Yeah, to do what? How do you follow that? What kind of teddy bear is that? The porn teddy bear? This is hilarious. Because it follows that. It's like there's always webcams and cyber sex. And then how about
the Vermont teddy bear?
I have not seen that catalog of those teddy bears. But no, yeah, I thought of that. I sleep with five pillows. Yeah, I have like a king size pillow that I actually use as a, like another person. Like I almost like have this, you know, when
do the whole spooning thing with a pillow.
Yeah, I do. You know, it's almost like, you know, when you set up like your bed, like when you're a kid, you know, and you snuck out, and you didn't want your parents to see that you were gone, so you set the pillows up like you're in bed. I do that every night and pretend that I'm with my wife. Just like have this like little. Is that sad? Larson's giving me the sad face.
No, let me tell you
something.
That's
always a bad sign when Larson gives you the sad face.
When you're working these hours, I go to bed way before my wife does. So I'm in bed by myself anyway.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like 8:30. I can't tell her, come on in bed with me. It's, mm-hmm. it's too early.
Yeah.
So
I just roll around and annoy you.
Yeah. So I really don't know what the deal is until like 2 o'clock, and I turn over and look, make sure she's still there.
I've always had a thing with the pillows, though, I'll tell you. Not, you know, not.
I've done that in hotel rooms every now and then. You know,
yeah.
Just because you get used to having a body next to you. You really do.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh. I'm just reading this one here. Yeah. Ooh, I, you know.
Uh-oh. Come on.
I didn't read
the
whole
first line.
I can fully understand what he is going through. My husband and I will be married for 25 years this year, but it's been difficult, and we did have a couple of practice marriages before we were married. I know that one. I just hope I'm not my wife's practice marriage. I think you should show your wife how much work there is here in New York for working actresses, that your connections can help her. Well, I don't know about that. On the radio, who we had on. It's so weird that when you're in show business, how people think, like, can't you just talk to that guy?
Yeah. Can't you give them a call?
Oh, yeah,
sure.
Come in
and sit down here?
But I'll help her any way I can. I'm going to finish this email when we come back here, because we got Jeff Jarvis.
Jeff Jarvis is in the house.
Yeah.
He's going to be in studio.
Yeah.
He's going to talk about media issues aplenty.
Let me finish this here. I think you guys in the morning are great and don't want the team split up, me and you. I do remember that when he spoke to your wife on the air, you said, I love you, and she didn't. Oh, she loves me.
Yeah, she does. She loves him.
Someone said that they've never seen someone look more in love. Maybe she needs to think about the kind of married life she wants. That's a good point.
The shoe's on the other foot.
Yeah, I'm going to keep hold of this one. I'm going to present these to my wife later in the day.
Oh, Lord. There you go.
So, Jeff Jarvis coming up, right?
Coming up, Liberal Agenda, and so much more here on Air America Radio.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley, Mornings Edition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's Air America Radio's morning edition. Let me just finish this thing that I was reading about my wife really quick. I left out the last few sentences, and I just realized that I liked them. Maybe she needs to think about what kind of married life she wants. It sounds like she needs to feel important, too, in her career. Perhaps if she were coming east with a job of her own, that would help. Good luck to you from Married Forever and a Day. Thank you, because that is true. So, and if that's what you were saying in terms of me trying to help her out, I have been trying, and, that would be great if we were both working. I'd like her to write here, you know. I mean, we'll see. You know, that would be perfect, though, wouldn't it?
Hey, this job's here.
Yes. I don't know if it'd be perfect if she were in the room writing for me, because then we could have this sweet argument to, like I had on the phone this morning, every morning live.
Oh, no, you don't.
That would become the show. So, wait, we got a call here. I think we should take. Let's take this call. It's from our friend, Pollux. Pollux is calling. Well, what kind of name is Pollux?
It's a code name, you half-wit.
All right, take
Pollux
it easy.
One of the twins in the constellation Gemini, okay? It means nothing. That way it's untraceable.
Okay, it sounds a little like Bollocks. That's what the British people call it.
Bollocks means, what are you, 9 years old?
All right.
Yeah, and I take call to commend you guys for reporting on the most important issues of the day.
Well, thank you. We try to highlight what's going on as much as we can.
Barrett,
yeah.
You're no better at detecting sarcasm than you are at sniffing out the truth. You know what I'm talking about? I'm talking about the hunter in Wisconsin, the guy who shot all those other hunters.
Yeah, we talked about that like 2 months ago, man, when it happened.
Yeah, the shooting part. You missed the significance. The shooter, he was one of the Hmong people.
Right.
Up in the hills of Vietnam, along with the Montagnards.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, well, now they're here. The Hmong are among us.
All right, so the CIA used them right during the war, right?
Or vice versa, smarty pants.
Okay.
Those people have been up there for thousands of years while your pathetic ancestors were scrapping with Canaanites.
Dude. Yeah.
Why do you think the CIA wanted them? Did you see Apocalypse Now? It was a warning.
Well, what kind of warning? To have a coherent shooting script before filming? What are you talking about?
Cool, Marin. You know about the goat?
What goat?
Let me hit you to something, to a little bit of truth, my friend.
Okay.
A couple of years ago, I found a wild mountain goat in the Vietnamese hill.
Right.
A completely new species.
Okay.
First newly discovered large land mammal found in decades.
All right.
Yeah, starting to make sense?
Keep it coming.
The Southeast Asian hills are crawling with undiscovered species.
Right.
What do you think the CIA would make out of that goat?
I don't know. A spy goat?
Don't toy with me, Marin.
What are you talking about?
All right. It's the DNA, dummy.
All right.
Whoever controls the DNA rules the world.
Okay.
And the jungles are crawling with unknown chromosomes just waiting to be turned into weapons.
Right.
Yeah, those hill people, they're sitting on top of genetic dynamite, and a lot of folks, not you, evidently, are fully aware of it.
All right.
Hey, you think it's a coincidence that the Hmong refugees were settled in Wisconsin?
I'm guessing not.
Bingo, smartass. And a good guess. Hey, what's the biggest organism in the world?
I don't know. That guy in the Guinness book wearing the overalls?
You're a funny man, Marin. Funny enough to spend your life in a camp laughing about what an idiot Mark Delvecchio is.
Mark Delvecchio, is that your real name?
Did I say Mark Delvecchio?
You did say Mark Delvecchio.
Then no.
Okay.
Look, back to the wisdom of laying down. The biggest organism in the world, it's a fungus.
All right.
Morilla bulbosa, and it grows underground all over the forest of Michigan, all right?
Okay, yeah.
Above ground, mushrooms.
Got
underneath the forest floor, a web of living fiber spanning thousands of acres.
Okay.
Yeah, starting to connect the dots, Mark?
All right.
The CIA put the Hmong in Wisconsin, man!
But that's not Michigan, man.
Yes! And there's no mushrooms in Wisconsin, and they're obviously not connected. Am I talking to myself here?
Okay, back up. So are you implying that the Hmong have a genetically unique human orgone mojo that nurtures the development and growth of arcane and obscure species, and that they are being used by the CIA and the Trilateralists to tap the organic weapons potential of said species? Are you saying because of that mushroom, they know when you're mowing your lawn, they know when you're taking a hike, they know when you're digging a hole and burying your dead hamster? Are you saying to step lightly and keep your ear to the ground like an Indian scout so they don't get you, Mike? Delvecchio.
Oh, man, you're freaking me off. I gotta go.
Okay.
Oh, there's somebody on the street outside getting out of a UPS truck with a UPS uniform.
What, you think it might be a UPS guy?
I don't know. Oh, man, what's wrong with his eyes? Oh, no, there's hundreds.
Mike?
Wow.
His name Mike or Mark? Did we lose him? That was it?
I think we lost him.
Oh, man, that's... All right.
Eerie.
Well, maybe he'll call back next week or something.
Hopefully not.
That was kind of freaky. You're a little out there. Right now, the editor of BuzzMachine.com, former TV critic for TV Guide and People and Creative Entertainment Weekly, our media guy, Jeff Jarvis, is here. How are you, Jeff?
Good morning.
Hey, Jeff.
So now, what is going on? This guy, Armstrong...
Armstrong Williams.
It's
Armstrong
kind of the perfect
Williams.
Match of corruption meets corruption, huh?
But isn't it all corrupt at this point?
Well, yeah, it is. And, you know, so you use your own tax money to try to convince you of something that you're not convinced of.
Uh-huh.
What comes next? A jingle for the Iraq War?
Uh-huh.
You know?
Yeah.
A nice celebrity endorsement for Social Security privatization?
I think
that'd be nice. You know, Steven Spielberg, mine's private. How about yours?
Right.
So that alone is absurd.
Okay.
And so you have Flax trying to flack us. For Armstrong Williams' case, it really is, you know, corruption meets corruption. On his side, listen, except advertising money. You get advertising money, but there's a wall between you and that ad money, and everybody knows an ad's an ad.
Yeah.
The problem with him, of course, was what happened was it wasn't just an ad. It was, we'll also put on DOE people onto the show, and we'll act like it's a real segment, but it's, you and I will know it's not, we'll lick each other, but we'll act like it's really new.
But is that true, though, Jeff, that, you know, I mean, because sometimes you hear people on the radio, like, I am not paid to do any ads myself, right? You know, you would know that if we took a break and I'd say, you know, this is Mark Maron for this and that or whatever. But, like, I do, I talk about things that I like, and it has an impact on people. And I think there's a lot of people that just do that. They act like they're talking about something they believe in.
Well, they're even paid to appear on the Tonight Show to talk about the wonders of American cheese.
I mean, right.
And the problem is it ruins the trust system. Right. So there you have Armstrong Williams saying, well, I should be held to the same standards as a journalist. Well, yeah.
Right.
You know, the question is, you should be held to the same standards as a human being. But does anybody trust that you got bought and you sold your soul or not?
Isn't the trust system been destroyed for years? Am I missing something? I mean, really? I mean, is there any line anymore between product placements? And literally, when I do Conan O'Brien, they give you a packet of swag. And part of that swag.
Do you share it? Do you bring it into the studio?
I do, actually.
Yeah, he does.
It does, all right.
In fairness, he does.
And the weird thing is that there are companies, publicity companies that do nothing other than try to get celebrities just to eat things,
right,
or just to wear something, or just to have a certain candy with the outside chance that they might pull it out on camera, mention it in passing, or whatever.
Yeah. Jay Rosen at NYU, who does PressThink.org, he's a lot smarter than I am, said this weekend in comments on my blog, you know, the real corrupter here is the Department of Education and is Ketchum Communications, the black firm that handled this. Williams is just stupid.
Right.
He's just stupid.
Right.
Because it affects his own credibility from now on. You know, when I started a magazine, Entertainment Weekly, a wise old editor sat me down and said, okay, there's a lot of rules about where ads go, but here's a very simple rule. It all comes down to this. The audience must never be confused about the source, where something comes from. We don't sell our editorial space. We don't sell our editorial voice. An ad must be clearly an ad.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in Williams' case, the ad wasn't clearly an ad. And now when he appears on shows, does he really think this, or was he paid to think this?
But now, this isn't the first time this has happened. There was some flack back during last summer about some ads that the Republican, ads that the Republican National Committee
Medicare
put out.
Ad. Yeah,
yeah, and it was made to look like a news broadcast.
Right, and they tried to push the drug policy. They tried to do a lot, but I think there's a bigger question this brings out now, is should we be doing that? Is that a good use of our government money? And if we do it, should we be out front about it? Shouldn't we be transparent about it in this new age of transparency? Isn't this the time you say, all right, okay, I'm the White House. I like this No Child Left Behind thing, even though I haven't funded it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to try to sell you on it. Okay, I can take that. Yes, politicians sell stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I get that.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that he was used here, the funny thing is, at a magazine, you try to buy space. You try to buy a plug. It's rare that you try to buy a person.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one matter if a celebrity goes on the Tonight Show to flog cheese. I don't trust him anyway.
It's weird.
But this guy tries to make a reputation, and he sold his reputation.
Yeah, but his reputation was that of a publicist, right, and a commentator of sorts.
But see, those are two very different things. He
that's
had
what I mean.
A public relations firm, which he shares with Oprah's boyfriend, Stedman Grant.
But how much integrity can a publicist have, really?
Well, but see, they're
true.
The belief,
true.
The, yeah. You're absolutely yeah. right. But
you're
the
a
truth
flack.
Is, yeah, but everybody figured that there was a firewall between. I remember when Armstrong brought a former NBA basketball player to the Republican convention in 2000.
Uh-huh.
And next thing I know, the guy's gigging all over the place. I'm thinking, Armstrong, pretty effective guy when it comes to what he does with PR. But see, he blurred that line between what he did as a commentator and what he did as a PR firm. But see, there's a lot of other questions that flow from this, because there are whole channels on cable that are dedicated, for example, to travel.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, how much, you think you get swag being on Conan O'Brien?
Yeah.
How much do you think a travel writer gets?
But how much do we, I mean, it seems to me that everybody's mind is bought and sold in this day.
You said the horse is so long out of the barn, it's
well,
it's
I think
it's
just individuals, you know, like even these companies that now pay people to basically, you know, use products.
The guy sitting next to you in the bar who says, whoa, isn't this Budweiser good? They're paid to say so. Yeah.
Right. They're paid to say so now. And the thing is it just seems to me that they've got such a handle on how to blast the message into people's heads, either from posters, from radio, from TV, from other people, from movies, from coming attractions, that the blast is always going on, and they're willing to hedge their bets that maybe just one of them will get through. They're willing to have all
well, it's like spam.
Garbage.
It's human spam.
Media. Right.
Yeah. But, you know, at some point, you still sell your trust, right? You guys sit here and you got to say, the audience, I hope, trusts me that I'm not getting paid, that I'm an okay guy.
Right.
I made the same lecture to bloggers.
Yeah.
Because bloggers are trying to figure out this world. Oh, I got an ad. Great, I got money. Well, that's good. But yeah. Be transparent about it. And if anybody comes to you and tries to kind of buy your space and buy your word, if you do that, it'll get found out and you'll have no trust.
Yeah.
You'll have no value anymore.
But this, obviously, the transparency is not really in effect with this administration or with this undoing. It's like,
right.
It's almost as if, like, here's a rag, go ahead and clean the window, and there's just grease on it.
Yeah.
You know, you never get through. Let's talk more about this and the tsunami coverage and some other things. And we're with Jeff Jarvis. You're listening to Air America Radio. It's 45 past the hour.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Let's land this thing. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yep.
And Jeff Jarvis from BuzzMachine.com, our media guy. How are you, Jeff?
All right.
To finish up what we were talking about before in terms of, you know, anyone's personal integrity when it comes to selling things, I actually wrote a bit years ago about how I think that the great philosophical question used to be, what is the meaning of life? And now I think the great philosophical question is, how am I being used? And am I okay with that?
Yes.
So now the tsunami coverage
is the key of exploitation. Yeah.
Yeah, it's getting to that point where, you know, you're like, is it obfuscating other more important, possibly, stories?
You know, it's really, it's a question. I don't have an answer on this one, but it's a question I come to and say, are we at the point, are we at the tipping point of exploitation here? CNN's done a wonderful job. They've done a great job with coverage.
Exploiting the event to keep viewers.
Yes, the pathos.
Okay.
To say, are we using these sad and horrible and miserable stories just to get ratings and make us look good? CNN, as we said last week, is built for this kind of story, whereas Fox is built for blather. And so Fox is going back to other stuff right now.
Right.
And they can't wait for the Michael Jackson trial. God help us. But CNN has this huge investment in being over there, so they're covering it like mad, and they're doing big specials. And yeah, they're good, but where is the point of too much? Was it last week? Maybe next.
Well, on the other hand, on some level, the point of too much is when the entire news crew of every show is there.
Right.
There was something. There's something exploitive about having every show. All of them are standing literally on a mountain of bodies and rubble.
Yes.
Saying we're here, and you know, my shoes are clean, and you know, on some level, once everyone goes there, it looks like a feeding frenzy on that path.
Exactly. Now, on the other hand, it's a very important story, and we didn't cover, you know, other earthquakes and other disasters the same way. We covered this one, frankly, the same way, because it was A, the numbers were big, and B, tourists were there.
Yeah.
And so we understand it, because we saw, you know, little blonde-haired kids get killed, God forbid. All right?
Well, that's right, and enough Americans are you know, were involved with this that they can actually follow the stories of people from this country, as
right.
opposed to, like, really doing the work of investigative reporters. They now see these human... We talked about this last time. It's
exactly.
a never-ending human interest story. It could go on for years.
Esther Dyson, the VC, was on the media yesterday, on this weekend, on NPR, and she said that because the tourists were there with their cameras,
right.
that confluence brought it all together and made it the hot story. So it's a very important story. We can't lose track of it. We can't just give $15 million. We've got to know how important it is. And so I don't take that away. But even the BBC, I heard last week, had people on my Sirius, had people sending in letters saying, okay, enough, you're repeating yourself now.
Well, now they have a snuff film.
In the world.
They got a snuff film now. I mean, it took a couple weeks for, like, even the footage that they did have. Obviously, the people that had the big tsunami footage were killed, right? So then they finally get this piece of footage that just came out last week of a guy I think it's a man, standing in the beach, stunned at where all the water went, and just going, what the? And bam, he drowns, you know, 10 times a day on CNN.
Yeah.
I mean, well, you know, there is, I was in England when this happened. And in England, the media ended up, first of all, covering it end to end during the entire time I was there, because this actually happened the day after Christmas. But it did serve, I think, a useful function in that it became a clearinghouse for people who didn't know where their family members were. And remember that there were probably about five times as many British tourists in that region as there were Americans. So it did serve that function, but there was also an ongoing question about the media coverage as it was taking place.
And now it's about going out and trying to find a sadder story and a sadder story and a sadder story.
Yeah.
And listen, it's worked. CNN's coverage, again, has been very good. Its ratings went up 40%.
Got me
Fox worked is still number one. Fox still stayed on top, and Fox is doing fine with its strategy.
Yeah.
So at some point, CNN is sitting there saying, uh-oh, when we come back home, our rating's going to go down again.
Mm. right? So they got to keep covering it.
That's the problem you get into here.
So you're saying that when Anderson Cooper starts to, on a daily basis, follow an abandoned dog story, it might be time to come on home.
Or when Kevin Sykes gets a haircut on NBC, yeah.
Oh, man.
That's the other point of this.
Yeah.
This is using tragedy for celebrity, right? Everything is celebrity. Everything's about stardom, isn't it?
Yeah.
And yeah, so, what did Rather say?
Rather has a great quote in the Times this morning. You know, he said... there's no place else I'd want to be. Yeah, than a place where the stench of death is rank in the air. I literally say a prayer of thanks every day in order to have this work. A story like this is why you get in the business. Does that smell bad to you, too?
Well, the thing that's weird about that is that, you know, like, the reason they like this on another level, Jeff, is because it is a blameless tragedy, right?
Right.
That there's no reason for them to there's, what is the investigative reporter's job is just to go, wow, this is really bad.
And
not like,
there,
you know, who's responsible
this?
For this?
Yes.
And so,
well, Rather has another agenda. Rather wants to go out on a big story like this. The Rathergate report, it was supposed to come out last Friday, said every rumor mill online. Now the site that hates them called Rather Bias says it'll come out today or tomorrow.
Let me ask you a question. Changing the topic quickly, does anybody like Tucker Carlson?
I mean, you know, here's the funny thing. When Jonathan Klein at CNN canceled Crossfire and said, Jon Stewart, you're right, that show sucked and it's bad for America, and Tucker Carlson, go hang your bow tie somewhere else. Right?
Do you think that's really what happened, or did Tucker Carlson have a deal in place and he knew that this was going down anyways?
Knox Nix. So
okay.
What? He's gone.
Okay.
Right. Bow ties elsewhere, that show is off. And I think Klein was actually doing, who's kind of a twit in other ways. He calls bloggers pajama people and all that kind of stuff. But in this case, at least he was looking at the audience.
Joe Klein?
This is Jonathan Klein.
John,
new head of CNN. So when he canceled Crossfire, I think it's a good thing. I said that in my blog. The conservatives came in and gave me hell.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. How can you do this about Tucker Carlson? They love Tucker Carlson.
They do.
Yes.
Because he's cute.
He's cute conservative, I guess. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, on some level, isn't that what he plays, the sort of cute conservative? I tell you something, he does a disservice to his intelligence, if he has any, by the way he yells and screams, you know, because I assume that he at some point was a bright guy with some sort of career going.
Oh, people say, well, it's not his fault, they're yelling in his earphones. Well, you got earphones on, too, and at some point, again, it's everything today is about integrity. It's integrity.
What'd you say?
Day.
I'm sorry, someone's yelling. I don't have any more thoughts here.
I know you've got your liberal agenda.
No, is that coming up? Yeah, it's coming up soon. But thank you for joining us, Jeff Jarvis. And I, you know, it's like I'm one of those people, I guess Tucker Carlson might be one of those people that they, even if people hate him, you watch him, because he makes me seethe. And I know a lot of liberals listen to right-wing radio just to get a nice hate high. You know, and there's something to be said about getting your blood going like that. But I appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
Talk to you again soon, I'm sure.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you.
Okay, and, of course, Mark Riley, as always. We'll wait. I'll say goodbye to you in a minute.
They're
all right. There's the liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. Here are your marching orders for today. One, send telegram to Mahmoud Abbas congratulating him on winning Palestinian elections. Assure him that Hollywood liberals will raise at least $50 million for his inauguration. Two, encourage rumors that new Gingrich might run for president. We could beat him, right? Right? Can we? Can we beat him? We could beat Gingrich, right? Three, have the people who just negotiated an end to Sudan's civil war sit down with Brad Pitt and Jennifer Aniston. This madness must end. Four, criticize Bush's choice of his new dog, Mrs. Beasley, as just one more token black in his inner circle.
No.
Five, quarter of the day, just drop it into conversation. It's been raining for 4 days straight in Los Angeles, and Michael Moore wins the People's Choice Award. Connect the dots, people. Wake up. It's coming, and it's going to be heavy, man. What do we got tomorrow there, Riley?
You know who's coming back tomorrow?
Who?
Art Spiegelman.
Oh, that.
Pulitzer Prize-winning comic book artist.
And heavy smoker. Art Spiegelman.
Heavy smoker. But not in the studio.
No.
Have a good one, Mary Jeff. Thanks a million.
Thank
we'll see you tomorrow on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.